that helps bring us up and remind us of what the task is about and remind us of the goal and to help us walk forward into the next steps. But this is a step to be fearless and thorough about. But you know what? All the steps are. All the steps are. We're going to take a break in a minute. And then we're going to talk about 5 and 6. In about 5 minutes, we're going to take a break. We're going to talk about 5 and 6. But I really want you to think about 3 and 4 and how it applies to your life. What do you need to do? What don't you need to do? If you're doing fine, great. And it isn't about making you uncomfortable, however a lot of this does. You know, I don't want to hear the truth. I don't know about you. And not that I'm the bearer of truth. What I'm talking to you is from what I've gotten out of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That these steps are designed for me to become whole. What is it but a remarkable sense of healing? It talks about in the book that we become reborn. Step 4 is when we die to the old. I promise you. That's where I got to die to self. I got to give up my right to hate me, to judge me, to abuse me. You know, I really feel that most people in AA and Al-Anon are child abusers. Because we're all children of God. And we're the ones we abuse the most. And getting a good fourth and fifth is going to help us stop the abuse in our own heart and mind. I don't think it has to start here first. I don't think it's like people say, well, I've got to love me before I love you. That isn't my case. My case was I loved you, and because you loved me, I thought, well, maybe I'm worth loving too. But I don't qualify it with it has to happen with me first. What has to happen is I need to do the actions. Your actions speak so loud we can't hear a word you say. You know, a lot of our program, this annoys a lot of people, but it nevertheless is the truth. A lot of our program is based in the book of James. In the New Testament, before they had the big book, they held meeting out of the book of James, 1 Corinthians 13, and Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox. And in James, it talks about, you know, you can talk about your faith all you want, but show me your actions. You know, you can talk a good deal, but show me your actions. That'll show me how you believe. And you see, that's what created the bad reputation I had, is my actions. And now here's my chance to change that. To inventory it, look at it, and start fresh and new. This is where the rebirth starts. Step 4. The completion of step 4 and a willingness to sit down with somebody. And for the first time in my life, be as honest as possible. The reason I say that is I realized I was so dishonest. It took me years. And still takes me a process. I'm sitting at a meeting in Scotts Bluff, Colorado. 3-4 weeks ago. And a grapevine rep comes up to me. Hi, Ed, you got the grapevine? You belong grapevine? Yeah, yeah. Do you read it? Yeah, sure do. Now, what I was thinking in my head is, it's nice he's doing his job. Don't bug me about the grapevine. I thought about that, and I walked over. It took me about 5 minutes. I walked over, and I said, give me a couple subscriptions, would you? And I filled out one for me, and I filled out one for a guy I sponsor as a mend, and I said, I need to tell you, I don't have a subscription to the Grapevine. I go to the meeting, and I pick up the one they got there, and I read it, and then I put it back, and I go. Now, that doesn't sound like much to you, but I don't want those bumps in my road anymore. And that was a lie, and I corrected it. One of the things I did, too, was when I first got sober and after an inventory, was I realized that I lied most of the time. I would lie when the truth would serve me better. And I'd be talking to somebody, and I'd be right in the middle of a sentence, and I'd stop, and I'd say, I'm sorry, that's a lie. Let's back up about 5 sentences, and we'll start where the truth ended. And I needed to do that because it is about action. We can have all the wondrous directions. We pray for, you know, answers, and we've been given them. Remember my story when we started? About the endless bottle of booze, and he got it. And they said, what's your other wish? He said, another one of these. Don't ask for more till we look thoroughly at what we have. we've been given a new life. We've been given everything we ever needed and how to get there. It just takes application. Application. Not hesitation. Let's break. It's time to continue our journey. Oh, I thank you for your comments. I always welcome them. A couple of you, I had to run and do a few things before I got back up here. I didn't mean to be short, but it's a little short period of time there where you had to go do some things and I had to go do some things. But I appreciate your comments, any and all of them. I really do. And you know, one of the comments I always love is somebody comes up. There was a guy I talked out in Tulsa last week, and a guy come up to after my talk and said, I didn't agree with anything you said. He said, you were right, but I didn't agree with anything. I'm one of those that like to have my toes stepped on. I'm not afraid of the truth, you know. I'm really one of those that believe that the truth will set me free, and that's what the steps are about. They're about getting at the truth finally, getting at the truth about what's going on in my life and what I'm about and who I'm about. We've gone through the first four steps. By the way, before I forget it, we will break at 1 and we'll come back at 1:30. We will have an hour and a half for lunch. What did I say? Thank you. One of those. No, 12 to 1:30, so we'll have an hour and a half break. I was going to do an hour, but I see that in the bulletin they've got an hour and a half, so we'll adapt to that, and that'll give everybody a little more time, so that'll be great. Are there any questions, any thoughts so far? God, I love it. I'm just answering everything as I go. But again, as I started out this morning, it's not that I'm the expert and I know everything. I'm just here to share with you my experience, strength, and hope out of love and out of caring. And it's because of what I've been given, I get to walk and breathe. And I never forget that. And I never want to forget that. Because without you, I'm nothing. I have come to the belief that without God in my life, I am an absolute zero, period. That's first and foremost. But I couldn't get to that point till I got through these steps. And when you write the first four, now we got to find somebody to talk to about our fifth step. And it's funny how we do this. A lot of us do it with sponsors. I did my first one with a priest in a monastery. I thought that was a pretty good deal. He was locked up, never going to get out, I was assured. Worked for me. But here was my problem with that. Father Dan, God bless him, he was a wonderful man. He's still there some 33 years later. He's a wonderful man, and I'll tell you a quick story. I hadn't seen Father Dan for 25 years. I took that fifth step with him, and I had about 25 years sober. I was back in the Iowa where I eventually returned, and I went up to see Father Dan, and I said, you know, Father Dan, what really touched me is that you used to say you'd pray for me. And he said, what do you mean used to? I pray for you every day, Ed. 25 years later. So that's the kind of guy Father Dan was. He was incredible. So I'm not taking anything away from Father Dan when I say this, trust me. But I found out that when I took my fifth step with Father Dan, I'm home 2 days later creating another fourth step. I really was. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I found myself doing the exact same thing that I just gave up. So I really believe it's quite important for people like me to do it with their sponsors, because the next day my sponsor is still there watching me. And my sponsor will say, gee, Ed, doesn't this all look familiar to you? And every once in a while you'll hear, well, don't take it with your sponsor. What if they get drunk? What if the minister gets drunk? What if your therapist gets drunk? What if the psychiatrist gets... Who cares? The one thing I can tell you today is my past don't own me. My past don't own me. I was walking through town a while back, and a guy walked up to me and said, "Are you Ed Mutum that used to be in the bar 30-some years ago?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Boy, I heard some horrible things about you." And I said, "Well, probably all true. Probably all true. I wasn't a nice person then." And he said, "No, I heard some horrible things." And I said, "Yeah, I understand. I don't have to defend it anymore. That's just the way it was. I am not that person anymore. I have changed. If they don't get it, if they don't know it, I don't care." There are still those people out there. Every once in a while, I'll run into somebody that knew me 35 years ago, and they'll just kind of back up. There's one particular nurse, psychiatric nurse, that still crosses the street when she sees me. Won't acknowledge me at all. Well, but I understand that, see. I understand that, and I give her that right. But I don't own it anymore. She still owns it. I don't own it anymore. Taking a fifth step with somebody who knows how to take a fifth step. We don't ever talk about this much, I don't think. Maybe we do, and I don't hear it. A few years back, I got to go through seminary and get my little 96-hour master's degree that I don't resent at all. And we're going through the seminary, and a Catholic priest comes up, nice guy, I'm sure. And he said he come up to talk to us about alcoholics and about taking a fifth step. And he got in, and he said that he opened it up with, "Well, you know, the alcoholics are a peculiar person, people. And what you do is you just sit there. You have no mannerisms. You just sit there, and you just be a vehicle to listen for God. And you don't say a word." And I raised my hand. I said, "Excuse me, where'd you get that information?" He said, "Oh, I've been sober 18 years. I said, "Yeah, I've been sober 25. Where'd you get that information?" He said, "Well, you see, I'm a professional counselor." I said, "Yeah, I understand. We're talking about the fifth step in Alcoholics Anonymous. Where did you get that information?" And the answer was, he never looked for any information. I sent him out of the 12 and 12 where it says, in listening to a fifth step, we counsel, direct, and advise. The three things they say we don't do in AA. Isn't that odd? Counsel, direct, and advise. I am so grateful I had somebody taking my fifth step that could pull the rest out that I didn't even know was there. If they couldn't counsel or direct or advise, it wouldn't have worked for me. And I'm telling you, if you've taken a fifth step and it didn't do much for you and you kind of went, maybe, it was the receiver. There are specific ways to take a fifth step and to listen to a fifth step. And they must be adhered to for the step to be effective. Now, I'm not saying, oh, don't blame somebody else on your fifth step. I think the effort that you did it is just fine. But as I said before, another one had never hurt anybody that I know of. In fact, if you're angry, irritable, and discontent, I'd put it on the top of your list. Because that, in my experience, is it. Now, this is the place where I had to talk about things that we're never going to see the light of day. I had to talk about when I was in Job Corps, when I was 16, and the gang from St. Louis drugged me and gang raped me. You weren't going to drag that out of me, buddy. I'm way too damn tough to tell you about that. But it don't own me anymore. Used to own me. It owned me so bad that he's the only person I ever told that to. Ever. And we all got those situations. Now, I've listened to a lot of fifth steps, and I can tell you, boring. Sorry. There's only so many things you can do sexually. There's only so many things you can think about. And they've all been done much better before. Boring. The only one of interest it is to us. Oh, yeah, then I am. And it just doesn't have to be that way. There are no original sins. They've all been done. And if you're having trouble with your fourth, doing your fourth and doing your fifth, get over it. That ego again. That ego, oh, I'm so bad I can't tell anybody this. Or, gee, I'm just, oh. That chronic self-obsession is going to keep you crazy. That chronic self-obsession is going to keep you crazy. Some of the things that I had to reveal were the nickel and dime compromises in my life. The big stuff, yeah, you tell that. It's good podium stuff. But I mean the little. Wouldn't. And I did anyway. My little 1.5-year-old little boy, when I come in the house and pretended like I was drunk after I was 6 months sober, and he come running around the corner to see his dad, and I was acting like I was drunk, and he just dropped his little face and went back into his room. That killed me. Those are the things that I had to talk about. The omissions of things that I didn't do. Those are the things that I needed to talk about. I really needed to talk about. And more than that, I needed answers on how to deal with them. Because I knew if I didn't get rid of them, guess what? They were always going to be my friend. They were going to go with me everywhere. And I don't want my temple to be tarnished anymore. I don't want the gold found inside to be tarnished anymore. I want it to stay clean, and there's only one person that can keep it clean. Me. Period. It's up to me to do these steps. It's up to me to take a thorough and fearless moral inventory. It's up to me to admit the exact nature of my wrongs. The biggest wrong I've mentioned to you time and time again, I'll mention to you again. It was always, always, always about me, always. And that's the biggest thing that had to change, oddly enough. Because if it continued all about me, I was not going to heal. I was going to stay crazy and keep people around me crazy. I took my inventory with my sponsor, and I took it with Father Dan, and then I took it with a sponsor. And here's what I say to people. I don't know that I was probably happier and freer than I've ever known, but it was new, so I didn't know what it was. I kind of felt limbo will work. I was just kind of felt in limbo, just not there, not anywhere. But what it was peace. And I didn't know that feeling. I had nothing to identify that with. I knew anger, I knew rage, I knew anger, self-pity, I knew resentment, I knew all that, but I didn't know peace. Because for the first time in my life, I got some answers. That my actions were creating the majority of chaos in my life. It had nothing to do with I was poor white trash. The only thing that had to do with it is how much power I gave it. It had nothing to do with I was the youngest of 7 children and wasn't wanted. It had nothing to do with lack of education, that I only had a 7th grade education. And I quit paying attention before that. Had absolutely nothing to do with that. At all. It had to do with how I felt about me. Alcoholics Anonymous is an inside job. The 12 steps are an inside job. That's where we got to focus. That's where we got to work. That's where we got to heal. But the trick is, it's still not all about us. It's got to be fixing us so we can be all about you. And love and service becomes our key. We'll talk about that a little later, but that's the miracle of the steps to me. That I've learned it started out all about me and it's ended up all about you. And I've never been happier. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? Then we get to a good old step 6. My favorite step, I don't know about yours. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. How many jumped in that line, huh? We've taken this 4th and 5th step. We've talked. We've got some valuable information. If you got a sponsor that goes by the book, and I hope you do, you've spent an hour and you've reflected and you've taken that book down from your shelf. And it's time to get down to the nitty-gritty. It's time to get down to the real surrender. It's time to get down to where the problems are, and it's my normal, natural instincts that I have abused for years, that I never knew any moderation in. My sexual drive. Man, imagine how I felt about that when I decided to become a pastor. See ya. You know, it's true. I had to live at a higher standard than I'd ever lived before. Now, how can I even think of doing that? It's very simple. I got the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. This will work on anything I want to apply it to. I don't mean to make light of that, but about our sexual drives and that. But there's a lot of people. When it talks about sex in the book, it says, you know, if you're committing adultery, if you're doing that, you won't necessarily get drunk. That word necessarily means to me, chances are you're going to get drunk. Anywhere I'm in compromising my integrity that I've established as a result of 4, 5, 6, and 7, 8, and 9, I'm in jeopardy of losing everything I've gained. I really believe that. And I wanted everything. I had a thing about me that, you know, the more thing. I'll make an admission to you here I don't like to make, but I'll make it to you. Please never give me peanut brittle. Oh, you laugh. But one's too many and 1,000's not enough. I'm telling you. I love peanut brittle. And I don't eat it anymore. Because one too many is, and thousands not enough. Year before last at Christmas, I bought 8 pounds of peanut brittle. Thought, man, that'll get me all through the holiday season. 3 days later, my jaws are sore and my peanut brittle's gone. And I'm looking for a new supplier. You know. It just tells me that this disease is alive and well wherever I let it be alive and well. And 6 in step 7 demands something I am totally unfamiliar with, and that's humility. And going here. It doesn't say I worked on my character defects. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these character defects. One of my favorite ones was self-righteous anger. Oh boy, that was a goodie. Those drivers on the road. Took me a while to get rid of that one. I think it was about 16 years sober. I'm driving down the street and I'm going to speak in L.A. I'm going to be a spiritual speaker, of course. And I'm going down the street in L.A. and this guy cuts me off and flips me off. Well, I take inventory of his ancestry and just kind of let him go. And then he does the major mistake. He goes, pull over. God, cool. And we pulled over and he got out of his car. He had an Audi, in fact. He got out of his car and as soon as he got out, I thought, fair game, he's coming after me. So I opened my door and I grabbed him by his collar and his crotch and I threw him over the car. And I thought, ooh, boy, I can't do that. So I went around. I went around and I picked him up and I put him in his car and I brushed him off and I'm saying, you know, I'm a member of a 12-step program. And when we're wrong, we got a problem. His eyes got this big and he screamed out of there. And I thought, what's wrong with this picture? Here I am, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm throwing people over their car. Another incident I was reminded of about that same time period. I was down in Bowling Green a year or two ago, and a guy says to me, Ed, do you remember me? And I said, no, not really. He said, well, you and I used to go to meetings. He said, I remember the last time I was with you. I said, really, when's that? He said, it's when you knock that guy out with one punch. And I said, no, you can't say things like that. I'm a spiritual giant. You can't, you know. And I promise you, I hadn't thought about that for a long time, but it was important for me to remember it, and it's important for me to share it with you for this reason. I remember that night quite clearly when he brought it up, and had you asked me, I was doing just fine. And I believed it. There was this guy who was talking during the participation in the meeting. And I tapped him on the shoulder and said, can you kind of hold it down? We can't hear the speaker. He said, yeah. And at the coffee break, he got up and said, don't you ever touch me again. I said, hey, you know, I didn't mean anything by it. You were just talking loud. And at these meetings, we try to respect the speaker. And you were just talking awful loud. And he said, and little Alice come running over. And Alice saw me much better than I saw me. She said, Big Ed, sit down. Big Ed, sit down. And I'm saying, oh, Alice, don't worry about me. I'm fine. And then again, he started again. And I said, no, you don't understand. I'm not trying to get... And here comes Alice. Big Ed, sit down. Big Ed, sit down. Alice, you're overreacting. And Alice left. And about that time, he put his finger right here in my chest. He said, don't you... And the next thing I know, he's flying over four rows of chairs. And my first thought was, how am I going to explain this to my sponsor? And of course, I got to make amends. So I go over and I wake him up. And I brush him off. And I sponsored him for the next 10 years, you know. He said nobody had ever gotten his attention before. So. True story. Now, I need to make clear that I do not approve of physically harming anyone in an AA meeting. And I'm not sharing it for this reason. For that reason. The reason I'm sharing that embarrassing incident is because before it happened, you would have never gotten me to believe that I was that angry. Wouldn't have believed it. I'm fine. How are you? Fine. Good to see you. Fine. You know? Would have never knew it. And I did a lot of work. And then I came to believe what the book says is that I cannot afford anger of any kind anymore. Whew. Man, if I give that up, I'm going to be a non-entity. Why? Because that's what I was all about. That's why I carried it in my sobriety for so long. That's why it was the last thing for me to give up. It was about being angry. And that defect, I thought if I gave that up, I'm going to be a nothing. And I found out that when I gave that up, I became a something instead of a mass of anger, sloth, procrastination. You know, I always wanted to work on that, but I kept putting it off. And... dishonesty. God, was I dishonest? Lee talked last night about stealing. You know, if I could move it, it was mine. And if I couldn't move it, I'd lay down beside it and claim it. You know, mine. And I had to work on that sober. I made some mistakes sober. I really did. That I'm not pleased about. But I wasn't at that point to get rid of that defect. I still thought somehow society owed me something. Talk about a defect. You know, it's always funny. Before we take our fourth and fifth step, we're always saying, justice. By God, I want justice. We do a good fourth and fifth. We go, oh, no, thank you. Mercy would be good. Mercy. If it's a good fourth and fifth, because you realize that's the last thing you want. Because if you got justice, you'd have to atone for everything you've ever done. Everything you've ever done. So our call changes to mercy. But I was not only dishonest financially. I stole time from my family. I stole time from my friends. I stole time from the people who needed me. I was a thief of time. I was out drinking and using and raising when I should have been somewhere else most of the time. So I was a thief. A lot of people say, well, I've never stolen anything in my life. If you're sitting in this room, you've stolen something. Maybe emotions, maybe time, but you've stole something. And in order for me to stay sober means I have to stop that. The word entirely ready, scary, isn't it? But that's where we got to get to. I love the way Bill fudges on this all through 6 and 7. He really does. I giggle when I read it because you know something's going on with Bill you don't really want to talk about. I mean, let's be honest. There's something going on with Bill. Anyway, if you know history, you know what was going on with Bill that he didn't want to talk about. But he's saying like, well, you know, you're never going to be perfect. We're not going to do, you know, don't get too carried away with this. He changed that later on, by the way, his feeling about that. But you got to remember how long he was sober at that point. It's always amazing to me, people in between 20 and 25 years seem to know everything. And it's always funny being around them. Last week I was talking somewhere, and there seemed to be a group of that segment of sobriety, and God, they were holding court, and they just knew everything. And I couldn't help it when I got them talked. I said, you know, I love working with the newcomers. Those men and women between 20 and 25 years. They're just... So that character defect I still have. But jokingly, but truly, one of the character defects I had was my sarcasm. Big time. Oh, I thought it was funny. Anybody to laugh at your expense is funny. Public humiliation's funny. When you get ready to do this stuff and you say that prayer, be careful. Because I asked God, I said, my sponsor pulled me aside one time and he said, Ed, you got to do something about your mouth. I said, well, what's going on? He said, your smart mouth, your sarcasm. He said, you're running away the very people that love you the most. You need to do something about that. And I said a prayer. I said, God, show me the results of my humor. And I'm in a meeting at a meeting out in California when I moved out there, and there was this lovely lady that came up to me. I don't remember her name. I just remember her eyes. And she was saying something to me and full of joy and full of life. And I just peeled off a one-liner to her and turned and walked away and was laughing. And all of a sudden, her eyes came to mind, came into my mental sight, and I saw the pain that I had caused her. And it devastated me. Devastated me. I had hurt that woman for no reason whatsoever. And I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to do that anymore. So I surrender my right to be cute and funny most of the time. Every once in a while it still creeps in, and there's always a lesson to learn when there is. I always regret it when it does. But especially being members of Alcoholics Anonymous and 12-step programs, we need to be inclusive, not exclusive. And it's very hip in AA as when you're introducing speakers or when this bantying back and forth and this negative sarcasm, and that has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. Not the Alcoholics Anonymous that I know and love. We lift each other up. We don't tear each other down. If you go to the word sarcasm and you go back to the Greek root, it says ripping of flesh. And it's really true. That was a biggie. That was a biggie I had to give up. Lust. Boy, that was tough for me. When I first came to the program, I don't know about you, but I thought sex was love. I really did. I thought that's all there was to it. And that's okay, I thought. Then I started getting feelings for people that I wasn't having sex with, and it confused me, honestly. So I'm real grateful I had a sponsor and an inventory and a chance to work through those things and find out what healthy is. All my natural instincts, as I've told you, were over the mark, even sober. I was... I won't share that. Never mind. No, it's a mixed group. We won't do that. Well, no, I will say it. Quit yelling at me. I'm trying. Okay. I was with a guy that was... I'll figure out how to say this as we go along. Rigorous honesty in our defects, we got to be... I was with a guy I sponsor, and he was talking, and he talked about... his wife and how he'd been 100% faithful to his wife for the 12 years he'd been sober. And we're riding home, and he said, "Well, what'd you think of my talk?" And I said, "Well, it was a good talk, but you shouldn't lie from the podium." He said, "What do you mean?" A lot of people participate in what we'll call self-satisfaction. He said, "You're trying to tell me you told them up there you'd been 100% faithful to your wife?" I said, "Well, I have been." He said, "So every time you're into self-satisfying, that's who you're fantasizing about?" I said, "Don't lie, or quit that. But don't lie. It's about real stuff here. It's about rigorous honesty here. And we got to be held accountable. We got to hold ourselves accountable. If there's a problem, get an answer to it. There are a lot of wonderful people and places to get an answer. I believe that 99% of them are right here in this program if we honestly apply it. And for what there isn't, there's capable and willing people outside of Alcoholics Anonymous to help us find it. But the other thing you don't want to do is my other greatest defect is become dependent upon them. We got to be dependent upon God. Bill talks about that. If there's anybody going through a tough time, you've been sober a while, in Language of the Heart, there's a article Bill wrote to fellow depressives. Gee, just thought that was a new term. And it talks about how working this program, he's no longer depressed, but he also talks about the spirit of dependencies that we have that have to be cut off at the root. And it takes a great amount of action and effort on our part to cut those dependencies off. He even talks about a false dependency on AA. It's really powerful. The book's right here if you want to, borrow it and read it. Right, go ahead. Just please bring it back. But I had a dependency on people. You were the reason I was happy or I was sad. How my day was going was dependent upon how you looked at me, how you treated me. You know, Clancy says it. I love he says, you know, people looked at me funny on a passing bus. And there's a lot of people that don't laugh, but I know exactly what he means. You know, they don't like me, and that means something to me. My greatest defect, as we already talked about, and shortcoming, was it was always all about me, wasn't it? Wasn't it always all about me? When we move into step 7, I always read these because for some reason when I do them from memory, I always say them wrong. And I want them to be right. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Humbly. What does that mean to you? What does it mean to you? It isn't about humiliation. Humility has nothing to do with humiliation. Humility to me is a knowledge that I can't do this alone. There was a guy years ago, in fact, he started Hazelton Foundation. He gets no credit for it, but he's the guy that started it. A guy named Lynn Carroll. Wonderful guy, helped alcoholics all over the world, wonderful member of AA. And he used to say, you know, humility, and I'd never heard this before, and it was very helpful. Humility is when, if you play the piano, someone asks you to play the piano, that you say, "I'd be honored to." We think humility would be saying, "Oh, no, I couldn't. Humility is acknowledging the truth. The gifts that we've been given. I was virtually unable to acknowledge any gifts I've been given. I was virtually incapable of accepting a compliment. Period. If you said I look nice, I go, "Well, yeah, it's something I threw together. It's just, you know, yeah, thanks, sir." Anything you'd say to me, I remember my sponsor taught me well on this. I was few years sober, and I was living out in Los Angeles, and I was cleaning apartments to make a living. Tell you how long ago it was. You got $10, and that was a pretty good deal for a 5-room apartment. And I had been in between apartments. I was a little broke, and my sponsor knew it. And he came up and he shook my hand. And he had $5 in it. And as he pulled his hand away, I felt the $5, and I opened it and I saw it, and I said, "Oh, I can't take this." And my sponsor, in his kind and loving way, said,
"Shut up! Why don't you just shut up? Why does it always have to be about you? Why do you have to destroy the spirit of the giver? Why don't you just say thank you and shut up?"
Well, I never thought about it that way. It was perfect. You see, even when you try to do good things for me, I destroy it. Instead of simply saying, thank you. You may not think that's a shortcoming. I think it destroys a lot of goodness in this world. People are always trying to help us and love us, and we just spit in their face because of our own ego and lack of self-worth or whatever you want to call it. But to simply say thank you, and acknowledge... Skip the... I have a little story I share about that. There's a woman, I started a little church on my own a couple years ago, and it's been tough going. And I'm not whining, it's just a fact. And I'm sitting there one day, and all the bills are due. Rent's due, utility bills are due. We don't worry about pay. We just want to worry about the bills. And I'm sitting there, and I know one thing, that God takes care of me. That it's not my job to worry about that stuff anymore. I don't have time. He needs to worry about that. A lady came in to me and said, "Pastor Ag, can I talk to you?" And I said, "Sure, sure." She said, "Well, I need to ask you a question." I said, "Okay." She said, "If God told you to do something, what would you do?" And I said, "If I felt God really told me to do it." She said, "Yeah." I said, "I'd do it, absolutely." She said, "Would you do it halfway?" And I said, no, I'd do it all the way. If I felt God really told me to do something, which God does talk to me, and if he doesn't talk to you, then maybe you haven't gotten to 86, 87, and 88 yet. But that's where you develop that kind of communication. And that's called the 11th step, and that's the way we're supposed to be living. But I said, no, I'd do that. She said, "Okay, there's a check on your desk for $500. I'm going to go home and get a check for $500 more because God told me to give you $1,000 that you needed it." Now, the bills that were due that day were $998.70. And I had tears in my eyes, but I remembered my lesson. And I just said, "Thank you. That's very kind. Thank you." And she went home and she got the other $500 and I went and paid the bills. 2 weeks later, she came up to me and said, "Pastor Ed, I need to talk to you." And I said, "Sure. What do you need?" She said, "I just wanted to say thank you." And I said, "Thank you for what?" She said, "For just saying thank you. God had told me to do things like that before, but I was always afraid to. And you made it okay. I don't ever want to destroy the spirit of the giver anymore. Ever. And that was my biggest deal. Why? Because wasn't it always about me?" And the answer is a resounding no. I remember the night about 15 years ago. I was laying in my bed. I'd said my prayers. I laid in my bed and the thought crossed my mind, "God, I want you to take every single thing out of my life that keeps me from you." But then I added the most important thing for a guy like me. I said, "Take it even if I like it. Because all I want to do is get closer to you." My life has changed dramatically from that point to this. Why? Because I was amazed that I meant it. I meant it. I'm tired of the defects. I'm tired of doing my way. I'm tired of not surrendering. I really meant it. And my life has changed since then. God has shown me that I have a choice in about everything I do today. I didn't have a choice when I got here. I didn't have a choice to choose to drink or not. I don't know what that's all about. Because when I had the compulsion to drink, I did not have a choice. I had to drink. I came here, I did what you suggested I do, and I came to the point of where I don't have to drink anymore. By God's grace, and he, I believe, removed that obsession to drink. But it's not about choice. It's about a kind and loving God. And then he gave us the directions. He said, "If you do this, you will never have to drink again one day at a time." And the biggest thing that was keeping me from the happiness, the joy, and the freedom was the bondage of self. The bondage of self. The shortcomings, the character defects, the lack of humility to say, I can't do this on my own. I need you. I need God. And I am nothing without that. That's what it had to get for me. I don't know about you. It had to get that point for me to finally take this step and open my heart to a healing that has been miraculous to say the least. The anger dissipated. It just went away. I don't have to argue points anymore. I give you the right to think whatever you want. And I also have the right to think whatever I want. It put me in a position that some years later, I could walk up to one of the guys that killed my father and tell him that he was forgiven and that if he needs a place to live, he can come and live with me and mean it. And indeed he did. I opened my house, I opened my heart, I bought him clothes, I treated him as if he was one of God's kids. Just the way that you had treated me. My worst enemies deserve nothing less than the best that you have given to me. And the only difference I can tell you is I became entirely ready to have God remove all these defects and shortcomings. Because all I want to do is be closer to Him. I live a life of peace today. But I didn't get there until I had to do 8 and 9, which is some steps that we're going to talk about next time through. I hope you have a good lunch. I hope this morning's been rewarding to you. See you at 1:30. How we doing? How was lunch? Can we open with the Serenity Prayer, please? Moment of silence. Serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Well, everybody have a good lunch and all fattened up. Yeah, me too. It was good. I don't know if you've tried the little Greek restaurant across the street, but they're really good. I suppose if you order out of the menu and rather than the garbage cans, it's even better, but it's good. Oh, never mind. Never mind. Now, what we're going to do is there's going to be a group coming in a minute, and I'm going to say, and that is the secret of sobriety. Thank you. And then, it's always fun, yeah. We had to, years ago, dates my speaking is, first we had to do, they did reel-to-reel tape recorders, and then they got these newfangled cassette deals. And then they'd always have you pause for a minute while I flipped the tape, of course. And my favorite thing to do was when they'd pause and they'd flip the tape, and then I'd say, when I'd start, I'd say, and that, my friends, is the secret to sobriety. And I could just see him going, all righty. Well, we're going on our journey through the steps, and it really is a journey. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine at lunch. Please, God, that I never forget it's a journey. It's not a destination. It's a journey. The places we end up along the journey becomes more and more wonderful. So I always have something to look forward. My sponsor's been sober 45 years, and he keeps telling me the best is yet ahead, and he's been telling me that for 30 years. So I'm going to believe him that the best is yet ahead, and it is a journey. We talked about step 1 through step 7 so far. I wanted to talk a little bit more about 6 and 7. I know it's been fun for all of us, but especially the anger. That I can't tell you how devastating that was to me. But I also want to convey to you that I had no idea it was having that kind of effect on me, that I was driving people away. I wondered why relationships wouldn't work. I'd wonder why I would become so intense. And it was anger. And it stemmed from a couple of different things. Number one, if I am defending my rights, it seems I'm always wrong. You know what I mean? If I, by God, I deserve better than that, I want to remember what I deserve. You know, by God's grace, I have been given many things. But when I get put myself in a position of, they don't talk to me that way, I got to remember who I am. And there's a way to do that with dignity and grace that I didn't know about. If somebody's being rude to me, I can simply excuse myself and go away. I don't have to educate them about who they're talking to. I don't have to say, do you know who you're talking to? My anger for years sober, somebody'd come up and they'd say a smart remark, especially guys, new men that were tough. Ask them, they'll tell you. And they used to come up and say smart things to me, and I'd think, you have no idea who you're screwing with. You just have no idea. You wouldn't be running your little mouth like you're running your little mouth. And I thought, well, that was okay. And then I realized, no, it isn't, because it's still the same thing. It's still living with that character defect. It's just adjusting it a little bit more. So now, when I have that happen from time to time, I just simply laugh and walk away. The reason I wanted to spend more time on this is because I need to tell you, I tried to control my anger in every way you could. I tried to work on it. I tried to process it. I tried to go down to the beach and smash big rocks that were heads. And it did give me temporary relief, but the anger, the main ingredient, still stayed. And I had to surrender that anger and that rage at everything, and most importantly, toward God. But it had to be a surrender. I cannot afford to get angry. It's not because I'm a goody two-shoes. When I get angry, it kills me, literally. Mentally, physically, and spiritually. It takes away from every quality of my life. And how do you not get angry? Well, it's in that book, actually. It says, we say a prayer. We say something like, God save me from being angry. What do you think? Never tried it before. Never tried it. You know, we're talking about, in step 11 is coming up, and we're going to talk about that, prayer and meditation, but we need to talk about that now in the battle of this 6 and 7 are a prayer. Do you understand that? It's a request. It's a prayer. And what I had to do is I had to get prepared to believe that God meant business. That if I did my part, He'd do His part. Now, what do I mean by that? If your problem is lust, I would suggest you not go to strip bars. Just a thought. Just a thought. If your problem is lust, I would not buy Playgirl. Just a thought. Those are the actions I can take. If you don't want to slip, you don't go where it's slippery. And just like the sarcasm before that we were talking about, that sarcastic sense of humor, I have to be very careful, because if I get around people with that sense of humor, if I'm not careful, I will fall right back into it. And I'll have to make my immediate apologies and leave. And it's not because they're wrong or they're bad. It's about, I don't want to be there anymore. I've surrendered that. And I don't want to be picking it back up. I was in the car business for years. Oh, don't hate me for that. There's other reasons. No. But the car business was great to me because I had this gimmick. It was a real good gimmick. It was called honesty. I made a lot of money. I made a lot of money simply because I was honest. I remember people come in. There was this one couple come in. They said, we'd like to look at that Monte Carlo for your son. I said, no, you don't want to look at that car. And they said, why? I said, it's a piece of junk. They just traded in. They got nothing but problems with it. They said, go get the key to that car. They thought I was holding out on them or I was keeping it for something. And they insisted on buying the car. And I had no warranty as is written all over that baby. And in 2 weeks, they wanted to come back and be mad at me. And I said, excuse me, remember all this paperwork? I told you not to buy the car. In the same sense, that helped me with good stead with a lot of people. If it was a fair deal, if it wasn't a fair deal, if it was a fair profit for the company, if it wasn't a fair profit for the company. I have no idea where I was going with all that. But if you ever need a car, no. They always got nervous when I stopped by accident and said, I'll be working Monday through Friday. But have no idea where I was going with that. We were talking about anger. We were talking about honesty. Yeah, I don't know. It'll come back. Where are you going to be next week? Probably about that time it'll come back. You know, one of those middle of the night things where you stop and say, I know where I was at. But the honesty's got to be an inside job, and it's got to be to the best of my ability. Shortchanging myself in the honesty department will not work. Honesty in relationships. I talked briefly about lust and things like that. Well, I've loved women for a long time, and I'm pleased about that. I don't have to go anywhere else to, you know, find happiness. But when I became a pastor, I realized I had to hold myself to a higher level than I've ever dreamed of before or ever really wanted to before. And I asked God to do that, and so far he's done that. But one of the things I found about my character defect with honesty in relationships is I was so, if it was sick, I'd stay and try to fix it. Because somehow if I didn't fix it, it was a reflection on I was bad instead of it didn't work. There's a lovely lady, the state will remain nameless, who about 3 years ago, she's just gorgeous. She's just gorgeous. And I told God, I made an agreement, I don't tell God anything. I try to suggest, but he usually doesn't listen. But I said to God, you know, if you want somebody in my life, you're going to have to hit me with 2x4 because I ain't going there. You know, I couldn't trust my basic instincts because they didn't been overboard. And there was this beautiful redheaded woman. She was just gorgeous. She still is. I just saw her last week. She's just drop-dead gorgeous. Wonderful name. She came up to me after my talk, and I'd seen her a couple times, and she said, Ed, I need to talk to you. And I said, okay, sure. And she said, I hope you're not offended, but I'm really attracted to you. And I said, well, that's nice. And inside I was saying, thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. You know? And we started talking on the phone, and we started, things were moving along rather quickly. What I mean by that is we were talking a lot. And that's about it, but it was good conversation. And after about 3 weeks of talking, it was all of a sudden I had to do this for her to be happy, and I had to do this for her to be comfortable, and I had to do this. And there would have been a time when I would have done all that, I suppose, because I was dishonest about who I am. And I had to tell her, I said, you know, I can't do crazy anymore. If you want to do crazy and if you need all that, I understand that. But you'll need to do it alone. And I said goodbye. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. And I left it alone. And I hadn't seen her for 3 years till last week. I saw her and she's still just gorgeous as ever. And I really think I fell in love with her immediately. Nice thing is, that doesn't mean I have to do anything about it. Love isn't a possession. It's a feeling. And I saw her, and God, it was so nice to see her. We spent some time together, and it was just really nice. It was really nice, and we talked about that time and how much she had grown, and things were going good for her. And then, you know, a Sunday we were going to spend some time together, and she got crazy again. She started saying, well, you know, I'm worried about this, and I'm worried about that. And I said, you know, why don't you just go ahead and take me back to the hotel? We were going to go to the art fair and that. I said, because I don't really want to spend my afternoon like this. I enjoyed being with you. Thank you. Have a nice day. What freedom. And it's not that she's bad. I understand craziness. I've got a master's degree in craziness. But what I understand as a result of 6 and 7 is I don't have to participate anymore. My greatest prayer a lot of times used to be, Ed, screw off. I'm sorry if that sounds rude, but it's Ed, screw off. Every time I listen to me, I get in serious trouble. Most powerful prayer I can say, because it gets me and all my defects out of the way so the God that I've come to know and love can work in my life rather than me fixing it. But with anger, I can't afford it. It costs me dearly. If I get angry at someone, it hurts me from the inside out. The guy I got out of prison is suing me. Well, isn't that typical? I mean, wouldn't you expect that? Sure. And when he first called me and told me he was going to sue me, I called him a name. Because my first thought was, by God, after all I've done for you, you're doing that? And then I apologized and I said, you need to do what you need to do, Captain. God bless you. If I can ever help you, let me know. And I hung up the phone. I would be so justified in being angry there, wouldn't I? But see, all my anger was justified. If I got to justify it, I don't need it. If I got to justify it, it's just a reason to hang on to it. I don't have to justify my anger. I can go through it, make amends, and go on. And what I mean by that, I use that as an excuse. Again, on 6 and 7, because what I'd say is, I'll just explode on you and then it's over and then it's all okay. No, it isn't, because I've totally destroyed the people out here with my explosion. I'm okay. They're in shambles. So I can't afford to go there. That defect, I believe, is the most costly of all of our defects. And the people that I know and love and work with is anger, self-righteous anger. Justified anger. Gossip. There's a good one. I have a sponsor who's very well known, and I hear from time to time some horrible things about him. And I'm not here to say whether they're true or not. But what I'm here to tell you is, had I heard him before I knew him, I would have believed him, and I would have never talked to him. And it is my absolute opinion that if it wasn't for my sponsor and the way he understood AA, I wouldn't be here. So when we say what we say what we say to people doesn't hurt anything, or when we're talking behind their back and they're not here to defend themselves, doesn't hurt anything, that's a lie. It kills people. It kills people. In fact, I was at a place 2-3 weeks ago where there was an old timer there, and he was really bad rapping my sponsor. He didn't know I was in earshot. It's not my job to defend my sponsor. He can do that on his own. He don't need my defense. He was defending himself long before I got here and will forever. I mean, it's not about defending that. But one of the things he said, and it's funny how we assume things. He said, well, this guy's speaking 50 times a year. You know what that's all about, don't you? And all his group said, ego, that's what that's all about. And I stepped up and I said, I'm speaking about 45 times this year. You tell me which one to say no to. You tell me which one God doesn't want me to go to. It's about humility. Do you really think I want to climb on planes my size 45 weekends in a row? Promise you, it's about service, it's about giving, and it's about giving all I got, because anything I got is because of what you gave me. It's just interesting how we perceive things, and we character assassinate, and we talk about people who usually are doing better than us. Did you notice that? Yeah, they're sponsoring a lot more people, got a lot more success, something much better than us. Because we don't pick on the lower ones. We feel superior to them. We always take shots at the ones, but gossip is bad. Not only in AA, but in your home, what we're teaching our children. That was a biggie for me. And I'll tell you something, if you hang around to some person that gossips, when you leave the room, you're next. Bank it. Count on it. And if you're the gossip, you know I'm telling the truth. And the person you can't stand to be around most is yourself. If you were like I used to be. There again, I've been there. I understand it. And I've learned through the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Step 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Notice that little word on the end? All. My sponsor didn't tell me, well, you make a list and this right away and this you'll do and this you never. He made me make a list. And I remember when I got done with my 8th step, I went to my sponsor and I was horribly depressed. And I said, man, am I feeling bad? He said, yeah, all these years you thought you were misunderstood, huh? Now you understand they knew exactly who they were dealing with. Boy. Made a list of all persons we were talking. And I got to tell you, it's pretty much everybody I ever knew. As long as I can remember. My buddy with the record. You know. Oh, my mother. Jeez, how do you make amends for that? How do you make amends for that? Huh. I remember I was 8 years sober and I was manager of the Harlem Globetrotters and I was traveling all over the world. And I stopped by Iowa to see my mother. And they had a big front page spread on me and a full color picture, hometown boy makes it good. And I'm sitting there seeing my mother and talking to my mother and staying a few days and I'm getting ready to go to a meeting. So I'm going out the door and my mother says, where are you going? And I'm thinking, I'm 28 years old. I'm the manager of the Harlem Globetrotters. I travel all over the world. I haven't been in your house in 8 years. What do you care where I'm going? And what I said is, to a meeting. Then she asked the next question, what time are you going to be home? And I'm thinking, anytime I want. I'm a big boy. You don't have to. And you know what I said? I'll be home about 10:30, Mom. If I'm going to be later, I'll give you a call. You know what she had the nerve to say? Okay, sweetie, I just wanted to know. She never had the problem. I always did. It was the first time ever I let her be a mom. Ever. That I can remember. That I give her the right to ask me questions. And I simply had to answer them. That it wasn't a war. It wasn't a competition. It wasn't about control. It was about her being my mom. That's a good amend. Years later when she got cancer. And the minute I heard she had cancer, I quit my job in California and drove home because the one thing I had never become is a good son. Oh, I'd made amends. But I'd never been a good son. Why? Because I didn't think I had that in me. And for the last year of my mother's life, I was an excellent son. We never argued one time. And I spent every day with her, most every day except when I was working. And I'd sit and I'd stroke her head and I'd give her a kiss on the forehead and tell her I love her. One of the amends my sponsor had me make from the very beginning was, Ed, I want you to call your mother once a week, and I want you to tell her 3 things. I'm fine. I don't need anything. What was the other? I love you. Thank you. I'm fine. I love you, and I don't need anything. I had never had a conversation like that with my mother in my life. You know the conversations I had. How are you, honey? Well, things okay financially? Well, things are a little tight. You know, just... Do you want me to send you? Well, if you could, you know,